So this morning I want to talk about you. But in order to do that, the way I want to, I have to talk about a bunch of other people first, including myself. So I just ask you to bear with me, and I promise that it will make sense in the end. So as you know, I'm a chaplain at Tampa General Hospital. Well, maybe 2 weeks ago, I dealt with a really difficult case. It was a car crash. A woman, her fiance, three of her children, and her grandchild were riding in a minivan when they were struck by a drunk driver. Everyone was wearing their seatbelt except for her son. He had just unbuckled to check on the grandbaby in the back when they were struck. He was ejected from the car. To make matters worse, as I was talking with family members and they were recounting what they remembered, several of them remembered seeing him fly past them. I can't even bring myself to imagine what it's like to see that. But sadly, it gets worse. The young man who was ejected was fighting for his life. The medical staff allowed me to escort his mother and two of his family members back to see him. While they were there with him, his heart stopped, and they were unable to resuscitate him. His mother was holding his hand when he passed. When that happened, his mother let out this sound. And it's in my work, it's a sound that I've heard three times. I heard it once before this and once after this. It's a sound that only mothers make. And even though it was three different sets of vocal cords making the sound, it was the same sound. And I can only describe it as the sound of a soul being torn. It's something that if you hear it, it never leaves you. It marks you, becomes a part of you. I pray you never hear it. And those who of you who have heard it, my heart, my thoughts, my prayers go out to you. Well, I was with that family and I stayed with them throughout the duration, from when they arrived to the young man's passing and beyond. I came back and visited them the next day even. I did my best to comfort and support them, to be there for them. Anyway, in the aftermath of this event, when things had finally calmed back down, there were tons of people, medical staff and beyond, they were saying, you know, good job and all this kind of thing, but that's not what struck me. The thing that stuck with me was how everyone, and I mean almost everyone to a person, said, man, I couldn't do what you do. Now, it's funny because that's not the first time that I've heard something like that said. I used to hear it all the time when I was a teacher. But I do hear it even more now as a chaplain. And my usual response was always just to downplay it and give some kind of humble, oh, shucks kind of answer. Or, you know, say something like, somebody has to do it, or I'm sure you could do it if you had to. But as I reflected on it, on all of it, my life, my work, and my God, I realized they were right. They couldn't do what I do. Now, I don't want you to think that I'm making some kind of egotistical statement. Rather, I'm making a theological statement. No one else could do what I do, what I did in those moments, because God did not create, train, and call them to do it. As I continued to reflect on this, I started to think about other people, and the dynamic turned around. I thought about my wife. She's a senior market research analyst for AAA. Her job, to me looking at it, consists of her sitting at a computer, crunching numbers and writing reports. When I pictured that as my life, I want to jump off of a bridge. Sometimes she works from home, and I see what she does, and I don't know how she does it. It sounds to me like slow, boring torture. I could not do it. I thought of some of the Tampa police officers who were at the scene that night. And they were telling me how they couldn't do what I do. But I thought the same thing about him. Putting his safety on the line for others, seeing violence happen, and having to react to it, to react to the violence, react to dangerous people and dangerous situations. Split second life or death decisions. Could I do that? I'm going to say no. I could not do what he does. I couldn't make that call split second and hope that I'm doing more good than harm. And so then I continue to think about this, and I thought about people that I don't know as well that still do difficult things. I have a friend, Sam, from one of my online gamer groups. Yes, I am that nerd. But he is a corrections officer at a maximum security prison. And you hear his stories of having to do raids and stop riots and having to collect contraband and do all these searches with some of the most dangerous people. Could I do that? No. Would I want to do that? No. And then again, I think of my cousins. I have two cousins that one is retired and one is currently professional athletes. Pat Mahomes Sr. was a pitcher for the Minnesota Twins and the New York Mets. He's a second cousin. His son, Pat Mahomes Jr., many of you have probably heard of, he's the starting quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. Those are my cousins. Those are my family. I wish I could do what they do. And even as a child, when I had dreams of being a major leaguer, I still know that I could. As I look back, it wasn't for me. You see, the whole I couldn't do what you do thing is not just about desire. My wife's job seems awful to me. I know I couldn't do it because I have no desire, no willingness to do that. But on the flip side, like I said, I wish I could be my cousins, but I still couldn't do what they do. When I look back over my life, I can plainly see that despite my desire, the reason I couldn't do what they do is because God didn't will it. In fact, when I had a shot to play professional baseball, the day of my tryout was the day I had surgery on my hand. It was not for me. It took me years to come to grips with that, but I understand that now. So this whole idea of being prepared, being created to do something, reminds me of two of my favorite biblical people. The first is Moses. Moses was born a Hebrew. He would have been a slave, but thanks to his mother's actions, he was raised like royalty in Egypt. Being raised like royalty, he knows how to navigate the royal court and even has access to Pharaoh, who he was raised with like a brother. After killing the Egyptian, he flees to the land of Midian. There he becomes a shepherd. Later he encounters God and is charged with freeing the Hebrew people, his people. When he goes to Pharaoh, he's able to gain an audience due to his time and the royal court. He eventually secures the release of the Hebrew people. We all know how that went. And after the crossing the Red Sea, they come to Midian. And they commence to wander Midian, the Midian wilderness, for 40 years. They wander like sheep in the very place where Moses learned how to be a shepherd. No one could have done what Moses did. When you look back over his life from his birth to his experiences to his training in Midian to be a shepherd, nobody could have done what he did and led them like a shepherd through that wilderness for 40 years. Nobody could have. He was called, created, and trained to do that. The other biblical person that comes to mind is David. David was the youngest son of Jesse. He was just a young child and he was chosen to be the future king. One of David's most greatest and most famous feats, as we know of, is slaying Goliath. And one and one that only he could have done. Now, we all know Goliath was a mountain of a man. Some sources even say he was a giant. A feared and dangerous warrior, a champion. I imagine there was no soldier, no warrior in the land who could defeat him. Then up walks David, just a mere boy. No sword, no armor, no spear. Just a staff, a sling, and some rocks. But that's all he needed, and he knew it. You see, like Moses, David had been created and trained for this moment. As a shepherd tending his sheep, David had become very skillful with the sling. Like other shepherds, they used him to protect their flock from predators. Those predators are usually quick and agile, which means that pinpoint accuracy is necessary. That same pinpoint accuracy is what defeated Goliath. The real difference between David and Moses is that David knew that he was being groomed for greatness. So our Old Testament reading gives us an example of this knowledge. Saul clothed David in his armor. He put a bronze helmet on his shield and clothed him with a coat of mail. He gave him all these things, the trappings of a warrior. David said, I can't use this. He knew I had not been trained to act, to maneuver in this way. Take this off. Just let me carry what I have been trained to carry. And with just a stone, he didn't use all five, with just a stone, he took down the most feared warrior in the land. So how does this apply to you? See, I told you this was about you. Get back to it. Just like Moses, just like David, just like my story, you have been created and trained for something. God has appointed you to do his work. What is that work? For each and every one of you, I don't know. But what I do know is that whatever God has created, called, and trained you for is important and meant for you. The New Testament reading points out that diversity of tasks is also part of God's plan. Verses 29 and 30 says, are all apostles? Are all prophets? Are all teachers? Do all work miracles? Do all possess gifts of healing? Do all speak in tongues? Do all interpret? Look at what Paul does here. He asks a series of questions that we all know the answers to. Are all apostles? No. Are all prophets? No. Are all teachers? No. So I think what Paul is telling us here is that there are a multitude of ways to serve God, and we all have a part to play. In addition to this, I believe that God doesn't just put us here to do one thing. Before being a chaplain, like I said, I was a school teacher. My mother was a teacher. So I grew up in the classroom. Even when I was on vacation from school, I was in school. I graduated college as an education major. During my college years, I broke my hand in the fit of rage. That's what this surgery was from, the one that prevented me from playing baseball. But during my recovery, I came to really understand that I personally had anger issues. I had things to work through. Fast forward, my education and all that came with me breaking my hand ended up being instrumental in my work as a teacher. I taught a lot of kids who had anger issues. But because of my training and my life experiences, I was able to help them learn to control what I had to learn to control. I even was able, I had a student who at one of the schools I taught had a criminal record. He had dropped out. It was a drop back in kind of a program. He was violent. He was angry. And in our private conversations, in our quiet time, when I was working with him and mentoring him, he told me he felt like he was a monster. Fast forward from that point 2 years, and he gave his life to Christ. Fast forward 2 more years, and I was invited to his wedding. To be able to help that young man was something only I could do. I had been called, created, and trained to do that. No one else could have done that. But you're not just called to one thing at one time. I wasn't just called to chaplaincy, I was called to education before that. Chaplaincy is my current call, and who knows? God may call me to something else. And if he does, I know it's something that I will have been created, called, and trained for. In fact, chaplaincy might be training for what's coming next. I don't know. Friends, you are so important to God. God has created you for a purpose, something that only you can do. Your life, your experiences, your personality, your education have all been training for that purpose. And that purpose is not just a singular event. So I say to you, no matter where you are in life or what you're doing, do so with the understanding that God has called you to do his will. My dear brothers and sisters, know your worth. Amen.